And now,
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I am Tawanda Henry Biti. And yeah, as usual, every week, without fail, welcome to the best political podcast in the country.
Yeah, that's just what it is. The best. No competition. Yeah.
And politics is how I can.
Of course, guy. I mean, sometimes no boy take a down period, but I think the situation's picked up a little bit. My demo I atanga footy.
It's getting hot on the ground.
Riot police again. Wanga waka zara uko ku park kunonzi ku Africa Unity Square ndatotadza kudya lunch zvakanaka ndakatariswa nemapurisa.
Waka zara mapurisa.
Yeah, man, it was tough having my lunch. Folks just there with their baton sticks and their helmets.
I'm sure the citizenry feel safer with their presence there.
Our police ever so friendly, you know, if you get lost and you need directions or if you just want to have a lunch in the park, you know, they'll come and they'll make it a lot more interesting for you.
Yeah. So so today we're discussing what do we have. We have, like you've alluded to, we have the NERA demo, national election, the NERA demo. Why was that? What was going on there? It just happened this afternoon, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I think they sought police clearance the day before yesterday, and it was approved. They were supposed to march to somewhere, but I don't think they were given permission to do so. So it just happened at I think it's known as Freedom Square, the space behind Rainbow Towers. That's where they were gathered.
Oh, the square that Zanu tried to rebrand Robert Mugabe Square, but it failed.
You see, I think, no, wasn't that just for the Congress? What was it?
Oh, really? Was it just for the Congress?
I think so. I think it was just that period where they called it Robert Mugabe Square. I don't think it was a permanent thing.
Okay.
So,
and then moving on.
Yeah, we've got, so NERA demos, then we're going to talk about, you know, notable, the individuals who are there, some of the people who are absent. A lot of our politicians have been, not a lot, a couple of our politicians have had interviews on Hard Talk, so we're going to talk about some of their performances there, and then finish off with my controversy.
All right, so straight into it, the NERA demo. This was as a result of ZEC, or the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, and its perceived lack of cooperation, or just a bunch of things that we've probably spoken about before. In some, you know, at least superficially, you know, this biometric voter registration thing seems to be a really big issue of contention. And a number of articles have come out in the Herald, in Independent, and papers as well, sort of talking about what's actually going on with this biometric voter registration. So I think the two real main issues right now that I've noticed is that, you know, there's been some sort of discrediting of biometric systems as a whole. So this includes, you know, biometric voter registration. Over and above that,
you're gonna have to repeat just a little bit.
Did I break up there?
Yeah, you did.
I was saying the real main issue is the confusion and the conflagration that's really around electronic voter systems, as in the actual act of voting, and the biometric voter registration, which is what we're having in Zimbabwe. So I've noticed a couple of articles in, you know, a notable state newspaper, which employs some of my friends. About,
you can say about, my name, bro. You can say my name.
I called you a friend. I think that's enough. but yeah, they seem to want to have people believe that the problems that you know are happening elsewhere in the world with biometric of with electronic voting are the same as biometric voting. I don't know why they're putting these two issues together.
Yeah, so
I mean, I do know why.
So from what I gather, and I will speak as a employee of state media, first of all, NERA, which stands for National Electoral Reform Agenda, for those of you who don't know, but we've spoken about it, is just a bunch of opposition political parties that have come together and are pushing for electoral reforms. One of the things is this BVR issue. But from what I've gathered, BVR will not be used for the registration of voters this year. The government assumed the responsibility to buy the machines. I think it was supposed to cost somewhere in the region of $50 million. But now it seems that the government is not going that route. They are not for it anymore. They've been decampaigning it, so to speak, in the press. Last weekend, I spoke to Ambassador Simbi Mubako, who observed the elections in Kenya in 2013. Yeah, the 2013 Kenyan elections. And he explained how the process went with BVR that in Kenya. And he outlined some of the problems that they faced in terms of some places didn't have electricity. And basically his whole argument was, it's a great system. We should use it, but we should use it once we are certain that it's been tested correctly. Because if it fails in one constituency or in one ward, then it jeopardizes the validity of the entire election. So I don't think that's the reason why government doesn't want to use it anymore. But that seems to be the case, is that BVR is out. So I don't know.
So I mean, obviously, like my understanding is that it's a much more difficult system to manipulate, and particularly to keep secret, in terms of being what's the shenanigans that have happened with the voters' roll in the past. So obviously, that's why they don't want it. But is that why the NERA demo then happened? I mean, you're on the ground. Is that why the NERA demo didn't happen? Because they've been decampaigning it, or is it still in the NERA is a little bit two steps behind, demonstrating against the government takeover of the process, or the government refusal of you know, this funding or this application for funding that the UNDP had offered? Because I think that's what you're saying, is that, you know, the government has refused to accept the money, or they've taken over the tender process, or they've somehow interjected themselves into a situation that seemed to have been sorted previously.
Yeah, so I think that NERA at this stage still believes that government is going to buy the BVR machines, and they don't want government to, you know, to buy these machines. They don't want government, they want the UNDP to buy the machines. But government seems to be abandoning that whole thing. So yeah, I think you might say that they're two steps behind, but at the end of the day, though, they're still pushing for electoral reforms. So the demonstration, especially after the meeting they had yesterday, which was Tuesday, with ZEC, where Justice Makarau, you know, locked herself in the boardroom or wherever it was, or she locked them out of the room and she cancelled the meeting. BVR was meant to be one of the agenda points for that meeting, and it was taken off. And then she said they're acting in bad faith. They complained that, you know, you've taken off one of the key points of this meeting. So they walked out, and it was just this whole thing. So I think it's been building up. There's tension that's been building up, and a demonstration was definitely coming.
Yeah. But the demonstration was called even before this meeting had failed and fallen apart, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So the issue for the demonstration was on BVR, that government has taken over the process of purchasing the BVR systems, which NERA doesn't want, because they assume that the contract will go to NICU.
You, You know what I like. You know what I liked about the fact that that meeting happened before the demonstrations is one of the criticisms that people always give my demonstrations and my demonstrator and my activists is, oh no, why don't you engage the government? Why don't you sit down and talk to them? Why have you tried sitting down and talk to them? And in this case, there's a clear instance of there being an attempted dialogue. And you know, from the tweets and from some journalists that were there, it seems that Justice Makarao was the first one to walk out by accusing the politicians for acting in bad faith. And, you know, basically she ended the meeting prematurely before they had even really had time to voice their concerns. So it's interesting, you know, for once, you know, you can't use the excuse here, well, why didn't they engage? Because they certainly did engage, and then they were treated this way. But I don't know, man. I don't know how you see Justice Makarao's position. She's in a very tough position, of course. But I don't know if she understands that, you know, professionally, she's got a professional legacy that, you know, I would have liked to see untainted by these things. But right now, whatever happens in 2018, however that 2018 goes, at least as far as the international reputation, you know, passed outside the confines of SADC, I think it's pretty much ruined. Because she's the scapegoat for all these, you know, ZANU mechanizations, in my opinion. I mean, that's what I'm seeing.
I mean,
she really is in trouble. Whatever happens post, if the regime is no longer there to take care of her post, post Mugabe or post 2018, she's really in a crock of problems, in a pile of poop. I'm not the Zim Tea Party guy. I'm not going to get into anything stronger than that. But Ameno, what do you think? Is she a scapegoat, she's a card-carrying member and knows exactly what she's doing?
I think she's in a very difficult position in the sense that this is the first time that ZEC is, you know, meant to be an independent body. Before, the voters' role was from Mudede's office, and he'd be there, you know, at calling out the election results and all those things. But now you have ZEC, which is attempting to establish itself as an independent body. But also in attempting to establish itself as an independent body, it has to deal with the fact that its funding comes from the government, right? So even if ZEC wants to buy the BVR systems by itself, it has to, you know, wait for Treasury. If it wants to go to the UNDP, then the government will say that, but we are a sovereign nation and we have the resources to fund ZEC. So you going to the UNDP is similar to calling us a failed state, which the government is not going to do, right? It's not going to allow itself to be in that position. So I think Justice Makarao, dealing with the politics of the post that she's in, it can be quite difficult. And you're right in the sense that whatever happens in 2018, the spotlight is on her, because the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is the one that is supposed to be handling elections in this country. But she is also dealing with a government that is not pliant. And it's one of those situations where you then ask, well, should she then just resign? If she can't, you know, handle it, how does she handle my demands of the opposition parties, juxtaposed with what is coming from the government side and the pressures that government is pushing? I don't know how I can, I don't want to make excuses for her and say that, you know, that she's innocent, but I can definitely understand that the position she's in is not an easy one to be in for anybody, I don't think.
Yeah, I think, I mean, complicitly, I think in this situation, in this country, and with how high the stakes are, if you're anything but, for me at least, and I know it's not black and white, but anything but open rebellion is some form of complicity, you know, in what's happening. But we're going, you know, moving forward so much from Rita's role. I'm just reading here because I have my computer in front of me. Some of Naira's demands include that ZEC itself be disbanded and, you know, the process be put under some international, you know, organization. First of all, from what I'm seeing, They don't say the UN. They don't say they want the UN to administer the elections. They say an international organization. I think their preference would be SADC or the AU, with international oversight. People are saying the UN. People were saying the UN obviously want to make it seem like, well, boys to their donors or whatever. But you know, I don't think anyone in this current state and given Zim's position can really call for the UN. We're not at war yet. We're not at war, so we don't need the UN to be administering our elections. So yeah, anyway, all this led up to the demos today. Did you go down and see them?
I didn't. I was very much in the office, trying to, you know, make money for Zim Papers. I'll just leave it at that. But
isn't Zim Papers funded by the government? So taxpayers make money.
So actually, Zim Papers is a listed company. We have to, as our general manager always likes to remind us, we have to eat what we kill. So, Rikuti taxpayers, hey, we're not like...
you eat what you kill. He's from the Tendai Biti School of Economics.
we're not like, you know, Nzichi Kambani Yamkwasha, Zimbabwe. But speaking on the demos,
I'm the one who's away, not you, man.
On the demonstrations, I didn't. I just caught some of it on social media. And, you know, I think it was for the first demo of the year. It is, right? I think it was quite a decent or reasonable turnout. I don't know how some people in our Politics and Beyond group on WhatsApp have deemed it a flop. I don't know how you classify a demonstration a flop if you have one person come and they demonstrate. You know, they've demonstrated what the purpose of what they wanted to do is. They've done it. But I suppose in terms of, did you get the masses, all however many million people live in Harare, to come out onto the streets? No, of course not. But there were people there, and they managed to get whatever message they want out. There were people, Pastor E was live on Facebook Live. There were people tweeting about it. There were people, you know, sharing. And of course, it's already started. Videos and, you know, messages have already started circulating on WhatsApp and stuff like that. So from that perspective, I think they achieved what they wanted to achieve. There were some statements. I think I might be able to pull up the one interesting one where it did.
Well, yeah, exactly. So maybe that's an unintended consequence. I don't think that was planned. But you know, you had Mutasa Ndosangirai, the leader of Sipisio. I'm forgetting what the last name is of Tanundoka. Sitole Ndosangirai as well. Do you have it there now?
I've got the Mutasa one. Let me play it.
Isu takabvira kare tichida kutsigira kubvisa hurumende yakaipa. Zvino taneidi kuti iri kubva. Kana muchida kuzivawo tinotsigira ndakambotaura. Ini ndakatangisa kutaura.
Yeah, so that was Didmas Mutasa, who I think is the interim leader of Zim People First. I don't know, endorsing Morgan Tsvangirai for president or leader of the coalition, whatever the case might be.
And yeah, so he did. Tendai Beats also spoke. There's a video of him there. He doesn't endorse Tsvangirai, but he stresses, like he did in our previous episode, the need for for unity or kubatana. So I think that, you know, numbers aside, the demo got two things across, that there's a convergence, an increased convergence in opposition, or there's people are closer to a coalition than they've ever been. And it also, you know, registered discontent for this ZEC position, this BVR thing. In Nzango, I think that for me is enough as to deem it a success. I don't know what anyone else says about numbers and things like that. Like in the group, we had this conversation about opposition politics being dead, about the numbers not being there, people needing to go back to the grassroots. And I think what we need to avoid in our discourse these days, and I'm also guilty of it, is it's no longer black and white. Is, you know, things aren't mutually exclusive. You know, politicians can need to go back to the grassroots. At the same time, you know, you can say that it wasn't a flop. So, you know, it's no longer binary, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me cut the opposition some slack and say, first of all, in terms of the demonstration, I was, you know, quite impressed, might be the word, to see that the individuals who came out. So you had the MDCT there, you had PDP, you had, I think I saw Maureen Kademaunga, but she's civil society, or I saw, you know, Vamtasa that was there. So you had these people come out, which I think, as I said, this is the first demonstration of the year, this is the first call to action, so to speak. And last year there was all this, opposition parties aren't going out, opposition parties this, when this flag was on the come up, there was where the opposition parties, Anata Jamuka and the whole thing. But now it seems opposition parties have, you know, decided, or they are coming together, and they've found a way for them to make sense of what it is that they are doing, what their plans are for the rest of the year. And I think it's just a start, and I think it's very healthy for our democracy in this country, is that you need an opposition. I've said this, I've stressed this in previous episodes, is that you need an active opposition. So it's great to see that they've taken this step. What we want to see is what's going to happen going forward. So, for example, I'm pretty darn sure that this BVR system thing is a no. So you want to see how the opposition parties are going to get their demands met. Will they go to SADC? Yeah. Will they go to the AU? How are they going to navigate this situation where the government, which has assumed responsibility to buying these machines, is not going to put the money out? So that's what I want to see, is where do they take it from this first step? And it's great that a first step has been taken.
Yeah, I think about them actually getting their demands met. It's really about, you know, what's going to happen, at least in my opinion, is that, and what's happened in other elections, is as the election gets closer, these things are going to ramp up while people are simultaneously campaigning. The AU and SADC and UN are going to have to take notice that, oh, Zimbabwe is going to an election, because the media cycles, as you've seen, and we're about to get onto it. And now I think, you know, Hard Talk is getting more and more Zimbabweans on. And I'm sure as we get closer to the elections, you know, the news cycle and Zimbabwe's election is going to be one of the biggest elections on the continent. I think after Kenya, people are going to keeping an eye on what's happening. That is necessarily going to force local politicians, regional politicians, to want to do something. There's the pressure of what happened in Gambia. People like Anakama in Botswana are likely to be putting some type of pressure on not only the Zimbabwean government, but on regional institutions like SADC. So you might see a situation where there might be some form of intervention, and you will see limited electoral reforms before the election to appease some of these regional blocs and international pressures. And I think it started now, but it's only going to get more and more. I look back to period YAHGNU, they're going to want to avoid another situation where that intervention is needed. So they're going to say, no, look, for us to be able to declare the election free and fair, we need you to sort of give us at least some nominal or superficial changes. And then what the opposition has to do is take those superficial changes, however insufficient, and kumanyanebore, and to really work hard. Because that failing, if that doesn't happen, if they don't work hard and if they don't win, I think we're stuck with another 5 years of our non-Nigerian.
So my thing is, what happens if nothing happens? If, you know, the government, you know, sinks its heels in, if Rita Makarau over at ZEC is, you know, just as subservient as she seems to be, and she just does nothing, will the opposition parties, all however 40 whatever many of them, decide that, you know, no election, no reforms, no election? That's something they've been saying. What then happens? I think it's something that, it's an ultimatum that I think they need to make clear sooner rather than later, because at least if in your campaigning you're making this ultimatum of, you know, what it is clear, then people will know. If you wait, and you could wait until, you know, 3-4 months before the election or whatever it is, and then things, the water's muddy and people don't know what to do, and another election is lost. So I don't know how they're going to deal with this situation, but it will be interesting to see what happens as we move closer towards 2018.
You see, I need to get a quick nuance. Nuance position, yeah, no reforms, no election. No reforms, no election is not a boycott, right? They're not saying, if we don't get reforms, we're not going to participate. What I understand from no reforms, no election, is if there's no reforms, we're going to make it possible for you to hold an election. Can you see the slight difference there?
No, I get it. But the question is, in what way, like how? What are the means that is going to... Because those are certain things that your constituents need to be clear about. You can't...
Yeah.
It's very nice on paper to say it. The rhetoric is great. But if you're not actionable, then I'm telling you, you'll have maybe even Noah Manyika, if he decides he's not part of the coalition, or whoever it is, put their name on the ballot. You could have Egypt, Zinem Nenzwa. And it'll be a two-horse race between Robert Mugabe and
Egypt Zinem Nenzwa as an example.
Well, because he's run as a presidential candidate before. Kisnot Mukwaji could come back from wherever he's hiding to put his name on the ballot as well.
Yeah. I think you know what's the main point is, and Egypt and I guess not, they won't legitimize an election, and
you've gone dead again.
Hello?
Yeah, you're back up. Yeah, you're back up.
Yeah. Yeah, I was saying, let's go back to 2008, because there's some sort of parallels, and maybe I'm superstitious, but I think the 10 years, some lessons will be learned. In the case of Mugabe running without a major coalition or a major opposition figure, and by major I mean, you know, the names we all know, Makoni, Moyo, Kosana Moyo, that is, BT Tsvangirai or ETC or Mujuru. Then they're going to run and you'll win, but it won't be a legitimate election. And what will then happen is it will be very difficult, particularly how bad things are getting in terms of the currency crisis. It'll be very difficult for him to run legitimately, to run the country. So maybe, you know, space but it's so mercenary and it's so cruel to the people of Zimbabwe for the opposition parties, because the people that really suffer in a situation like that are the Zimbabweans. And then you sort of have a situation where, you know, they might turn around and be angry at opposition for the suffering that they're being subjected to by a government, a ZANU government, that's trying to run the country without illegitimization.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. This is the first demo. I know that the Electoral Reform Commission, ERC, is holding a discussion tomorrow, or which will be Thursday. By the time you're listening to this podcast, it should have happened. Ruveneko Live will be there, so it will be on her, on Ruveneko's live page. So even if you miss it, you can go there and check it out and see what the conversation is there about. It's going to be about BVRs, you know, the myths, the truths, the lies, all to do with BVR, which is, you know, biometric voter registration for a new voter's roll, not biometric voting or whatever that people might want to think. But from the demo today, one noticeable absentee was Mai Mujuru. I don't know if she's back from the UK. That might actually be why she wasn't.
She's probably still reeling from that hard talk interview. I don't know why I'm closing it.
Stephen Sacco was quite brutal.
Huh? He wasn't brutal. She just was. She's just poor.
I think so too. I think she's just poor.
A good journalist and a good interviewer is a bully. It's not a podcast where you're coming to have a discussion. It's an interview.
That's true.
It's adversarial.
No, the thing is, for me, is I don't get why, you know, she's even a factor when it comes to the coalition. Because, you know, she claims to have people and she claims to have, you know, the people want me, but I don't buy it. Like, that was just a absolutely poor performance. She had no answers. There's certain things she should be able to answer now. And I think she has a very terrible PR team, because everywhere she goes, the first question that she's going to get is, you were in ZANU-PF for 34 years. What makes you different today? That question is never not going to come. And I used a double negative because it's the only way to express how this question is always going to be there. She should have a better answer than I was trying to reform from within. And what was the other one? Yes, I was there, but the people know me. They know me. They know the good works that I did when I was a minister. You were a minister and you tried to block Strive Masiwa from opening a telecommunications company in this country.
First of all, we forgave her for none of the good works that she's done. At least opposition parties seem to have done that. But she can't then claim to have any good work. Anna can achieve one program in 50 years that you can point to and say, Mai Mujuru builds that. Kana one.
So this is the thing, is I don't get it. Like, these are questions that are always going to come. The Gukuraundi is another question that's always going to come. And she pleads ignorance. She says, I was in cabinet, but I did not know. Your husband was the leader of the army. He was the army general, and you did not know. Well, you know, maybe
no,
they did.
To her, if people don't know what we're referring to, Mai Mujuru, when she was in London, I think last week, gave an interview with Stephen Sacco on BBC's Hard Talk. I think you can find the interview on BBC's iPlayer, but I'm sure by now some enterprising Zimbabwean has put it on YouTube. So just have a look at that. But to be fair, her answer about her husband being the head of the army is that, yeah, was fair. I think, in my own opinion, that was a reasonable answer. And saying, Kuti, everyone knows 5th Brigade didn't operate within the normal confines of the army hierarchy and structure. It operated directly under the president's office. So in that way, you can't say my husband, at least in terms of an answer to give, it might not be true, but to give an answer, you can't say that any of the army hierarchy knew about what 5th Brigade was doing, because they operated under the president personally.
Fair enough. I can concede to that one. But you have Muramba Tsvina. You have other incidents where she was the vice president. And from what it seems, she was a ceremonial vice president who had no authority, no power. So I don't know what good works she speaks of when she was a minister or when she was whatever it was, because she clearly just went to cabinet to sit there because she had no decision-making authority. She had nothing that she could contribute. And this is a person who wants to be president. I don't buy it. She doesn't inspire anything in me if she were to run as a candidate. I'd actually think she'd make things worse. Hopefully she has good people around her, but, you know, let me not call out.
I think
anyone because we might want to get them on here, and then I can call them out in person.
I think why she's wanted in the coalition is that she's the most tangible and direct to maybe a disgruntled ZANU base. You know, people are always accusing opposition of not going to the grassroots. She, you know, Maya Mujuru can move quite freely in any constituency in this country. I think that's a fact, and that's something that will not change. Also, she has money. Let's not forget Annemarie Mbeki. She's got money.
She
and
claims she doesn't.
Steps into her as a coalition. please. She, with all the looting that her and her late husband did, you scheme they don't have money.
Auntie, she
for
said.
Those who don't understand.
She said, what did she say? She said that those things didn't happen. Churu Chamujuru in Chiadzwa was a joke that the people there had because she was running horticulture programs right next to where they were mining diamonds, but coincidentally.
So Maimujuru would have us believe that she was growing tomatoes in the middle of Chiazwa's diamond fields.
I mean, that's right. Yes, that's right. She was growing tomatoes and pumpkins right next to where they were mining diamonds.
Yeah, I mean, look, she's a mold of politician. I mean, obviously, notwithstanding her doctorate, so now we have to question how she got that doctorate. You know, we can contrast her and compare her performance on Hard Talk to Minister Walter Mzembe, Minister at Large. Also then was on BBC Hard Talk and had a, you know, he danced. He's a young politician and he obviously has very quick feet and he's quick-witted around every single question that he got. But he definitely gave a much better performance than, in my opinion, than Maimujuru did. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, he did. He was on with Sarah Montague. So not Stephen Sacco. I think Stephen Sacco is a bit, you know, he's a bit more. Yeah, I think he'd have given Honorable Mzembe a harder time, but you know, he still got tough questions posed to him, and I think he handled himself. He was prepared. You could see that he had answers for the questions before the questions were even done, and they were quite clear. He expressed himself straightforward. He didn't mince his words, so I think that was his performance was great. What he gave was the party rhetoric. So we in Zimbabwe will all, you know, we'll listen to it and roll our eyes, some of us, because, you know, some of the things, you know, that, well, that's not how the situation is. One of the biggest talking points for me was where he alluded to the fact that the bond note might be devalued to the value of the rand. Now, this is not a fact. Please don't go out there and, you know, say that Politics and Beyond told us that the bond note's going to be devalued to the rand. But he's advocated for us to adopt the rand. He said it on the show. He said he brought it up in cabinet and his point was squashed. But he believes, you know, market forces will speak for themselves and eventually we're going to have to devalue the bond note to the value of the rand. So that was one interesting point.
What he said, you know, to get a little bit more economical or economical, that's not even the correct word, but I'm trying to sound smart. he said that for us to adopt the rand, we're going to need our own unit or our own currency, our own method of exchange internally. And then we can peg that unit of exchange to the rand. So before the pegging of the bond note to the rand, the bond note then has to become accepted as the Zimbabwean currency. And what he's saying is that it's already happening and we've already... So basically... Taking the bond note to the rand is actually a mild story. what he's actually said is that the Zim dollar is coming back in the form. In fact, he even goes, I think if we had the clip to play, he actually says, I don't know whether you call it a baller, I don't know whether you call it a Zim dollar, I don't know whether you call it a bond note, but it's going to become the Zim dollar, effectively. And that's, for me, is actually the more frightening thing than pegging it to the rand.
But we spoke about this in our episode with Chris Chenga when bond notes were introduced, and Chris Chenga said to us, this is a Zimbabwean currency. So we have not been under any illusion. But I suppose for a government official to come out and state something like that is a serious position.
Yeah. I think is it not one of those cases where, you know, the right hand is not speaking to the left hand, because it always seems as if Chinamasa is always the last person to be informed about economic policy and financial policy in this country.
But the thing is, we've noticed the trend in our government is that ministers seem to speak out of turn a lot. You have ministers, Professor Moyo, for example, who will go on Twitter and he will almost criticize government policy, which you've seen infighting between the Minister of Indigenization, Honorable Joao, and Honorable Chinamasa, over the indigenization of banks. These are things that we've seen. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if Minister Mzembe is speaking out of turn and things get reversed or things happen. Because it's something that we've seen in our government. Our government, the cabinet itself, has a lot of disorganization. We've spoken about it again on this show, where it's not good for the image of the government. It makes them look very disorganized. It makes them look very disjointed. It makes them look weak. It would go fight behind your cabinet doors. Go speak about these things. But when you come out to the public, at least speak with one voice. Whether your voice is against what people want or whatever it is, at least show some sort of consistency where you are all saying the same thing.
Yeah, no, Chris, I agree with you, but I also like your and I'm sorry to use the word, your naivete that the Zimbabwean government currently has a good image to protect
Listen.
I'm not saying no, I agree with you.
Whatever's left of their image, at least have a little bit of dignity. I mean, you can't then just, everyone is out there fighting and doing whatever.
Guys, these guys have no dignity, and it can be evidenced by the fact that this person that we're saying was a top performer, Mr. Mzembe, to move on to our next point. We're saying he's a top performer. We're saying he's our seconded to be our candidate to the UNWTO, to become Secretary General of the UNWTO, and we seem to have it on good authority. That's, you know, he goes around calling himself an engineer, but he does not hold an engineering degree. You know, he has honorary doctorates from online universities, which he hasn't finished paying for. And, you know, in my short life of 27 years, I don't think, you know, you pay for an honorary degree because it's an honor, you know, and so, but that's the type of person that we're saying performed well. That's the type of person that this government has seconded to challenge for the UNW, the United Nations World Tourism Organization, to be Secretary General of it. A whole government minister with fake qualifications.
I wonder how many of our PhD holders are actually PhD holders.
You know, I think there needs to be an audit in terms of the PhDs. I mean, certainly we know that Dr. Mai Mugabe is a doctor of nothing besides nonsense.
She has a doctorate from the University of Zimbabwe. Please,
which she got over the telephone. Because in no way in the world do you submit a thesis in less than 9 months. You can't even give birth to a living human, a child, and let alone you want to give birth to a PhD in less than 9 months.
All I know is the University of Zimbabwe awarded her with a PhD. At the same time as Dr. Mujuru, surprisingly.
And you know what, I'm also now starting to question Dr. Mujuru's PhD. Because from these interviews, guys, and I mean, you know, if she did do the work, and you know, God bless her soul, and maybe she did the work, or she got someone else to do it, but those are not the answers of a PhD holder, guys.
But look, there's a pool of them. You have Dr. Philip Chiangwa, and shout out to him and his victory in disposing the dictator.
Let's talk on Philip Chiangwa. He comes back to Zimbabwe and he says, "Yeah, we disposed the dictator." You know, Isa Hayatou, for those, how do you say his name? Hayatou.
Yeah, Isa Hayatou.
Isa Hayatou has been head of the Confederation of African Football since 1980 something.
For like 22 years, I think it is, or more.
Yeah. So Dr. Philip Chiangwa led a coup, a palace coup, in as far as he got a new candidate to win. Ahmed Ahmed, for those that don't know, it's just a little background. So anyway, he comes back to Zimbabwe and this man is standing at the airport, garrulous as ever. Philip Chiangwa, Dr. Philip Chiangwa at his flying best, and he says, "Yes, I was the campaign manager and I removed the dictator. And, you know, I'm so proud of how I removed the dictator, but I would like to thank Mugabe for allowing me to remove that dictator." I think these people don't understand, you know, irony, because fiction is truly, life is truly stranger than fiction. Kuti, you're thanking the longest service president on the continent, if not the world, removing another long-standing...
Well, it's not the longest serving on the continent. There's guys who have been, you know, but he is the oldest president. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I meant, the oldest president. There's what's his name? From that side of from the Gambia.
There's Nguema in Equatorial Guinea.
Yeah.
And Paul Biya and Dos Santos as well.
Oh, Biya, that's the one. That's the one I was thinking of. Mm. So yeah, the Dr. Chiangwa is also another Dr. Wells.
Doesn't AC have a doctorate?
Yeah, he's got it. He's got an honorary. He's been calling himself Dr. AC.
AC actually has an honorary doctorate.
Yeah, from the Institute of Philanthropy. The same one that gave Tuku his doctorate, isn't it?
That gave who? Oh, Tuku.
Yeah, but I think all of them, Tuku's has got other ones, but he's also been given one locally by this human rights. I don't know, it's some funny... I would Google AC's bio, but I really couldn't be bothered.
I think we need to now get AC onto the show and ask him some questions.
But oh yeah, certainly. He responded to your calls. He's resurfaced.
He has actually. Yeah, he has. I've seen him. You know, now he's posting. He's part of the Tea Party. He's been seen with Dr. Manyika. He's called out.
Is he part of the Tea Party? I was under the impression that him and Kudo and were beefing.
So apparently that was a fake post on the Lumumba. The Lumumba playbook is a fake account. It doesn't belong to him because he's been commenting on the Tea Party. Yeah, and I believe they met Dr. Noah Manyika together on the day that, you know, that they met, which was last week, I think.
Can I say I've met Dr. Manyika as well, and I quite like him. He's quite affable, but people shouldn't hype this man up. Hey, he's in for a big surprise.
He's on this flag Thursdays, tomorrow or the day after that. Tomorrow, yeah, Thursday. So we'll see what he has to say. And, you know, maybe we'll also try bring him on here and hear what Build Zimbabwe is all about and whether his PhD is a real PhD.
No, this one I can't believe. No, he's a very likable guy, and you have to respect that he's working. That being said, that he needs to be open to the idea of a one horse or two horse race in this coming election, because otherwise, you know, his 2% or whatever percent can be the same as Simba Makoni's 8% in previous elections.
I think, yeah, we're gonna
use it. It stops the 49, 50 plus 1% that's needed for outright victory.
I think, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens, how you, as political parties now start to engage each other and their constituents, how we move forward as we progress towards 2018. Today was a clear highlight that, you know, the game is now begun. I think we can officially state that the game has begun. ZANU-PF has been playing the game since Kudara, but now opposition parties now seem to, they've got their boots on and they're ready to run onto the field. Or they have run onto the field.
What would you think? What would you think of, I don't know if you, for those who don't watch this Tea Party videos, of a primary race of opposition candidates to decide who the final candidate is? Or is it a waste of resources and it will lead to divisions?
Do you know what? I don't know how you'd go about it in terms of resourcing it, in terms of how you run such a project, but I think it's something that the opposition parties themselves are going to have to mobilize, you know, amongst themselves. Really, the main candidates you're looking at in terms of numbers, at least, is MDC, Zim People First, / National People's Party, whatever, and PDP. Everyone else, Ana Elton Mangoma, Ana Marcelina, I don't think they have, you know, maybe, and Welshman Ngube as well, MDC. Everyone else, I don't see them having a strong enough base for them to convince their voters to say that, you know, it's to go into the coalition and try to dictate terms. You're going to have to go with the people with the numbers, because if they don't support you, then there's no way you're getting in. And as I said, MDCT, yeah, number one in terms of numbers. So it's going to be about four people maybe. And amongst themselves, then they're just going to have to decide how best they're going to deal with that situation.
Do you know what I would do? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I would want a situation where a coalition is run, and people we already have a shadow cabinet in place, so that when the coalition is announced, you'd say, for example, you're having, you know, Welshman Ngube as president, or Dumisa Dabengo as president, you know, Morgan Tsvangirai as vice president, or, you know, Mike Hupe as vice president. And then you say, oh, we've got, you know, Simba Makoni as minister of finance, or Nkosana Moyo as minister of industry. And you already have a shadow cabinet leading up to the election. So you can say to the people, these are the people we already have ready to move our country forward. So as soon as we win, we're starting on day one, and we're going straight there, and we're running, and we're moving this country forward. And you need to mix an Ashingi Muyeza, you know, your
Munyeza,
James Makambas, or whoever is interested, these industrialists, whoever is interested, you need to throw them somewhere, your technocrats, your engineers. You need to throw them tokenistically inside there, so that for the people you are saying, look, this is our coalition, this is our team, and we're campaigning together. But more importantly, we're ready to govern from today, because we already have, you know, Tendai Biti is got the portfolio of finance. He's not campaigning for presidency, he's campaigning for finance ministry. So as soon as we win, he's going straight into that ministry and starting his job. So we're already ready on the ground.
We'll see what happens. You know, I hope they're listening to your suggestion. I hope they're listening to suggestions from, you know, the people they expect to vote for them and whatever it
is.
But yeah, I think our running time, and you're going to shout at me, our running time is 54 minutes, so I think we need to cut it right here.
No, we can cut it. There's some, thank you guys. always good catching up, and you've been listening to Politics on Beyond on Capital 263. Who are you?
yeah. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba. You can catch me on at Chris Charamba on all social media.
And yeah, I'm at Henry Beattie on Twitter and Facebook. And yeah, I'm away gallivanting, but I'm around. And yeah.
Yeah, we had
to say it.
We had to do this via whatever kind of technologies, FaceTime. Hopefully it comes out sounding proper. But thanks for listening. Yeah, as you said, free to say it, free to do it. Peace.
Cheers. Yep. And now.
Capital 263.